Welcome to Job Tales, the show where we find out about different professions from around the world. Each week I speak to a new guest with a very interesting job. I'm Laura Leoncini and today my guest is Mark Lyman. Mark is Executive Director at Universal Rights Group, a think tank he created over 10 years ago. What is the definition of human rights? How do you make your way in the enticing world of the United Nations and the NGOs? What do you need to study to be a human rights professional? These and more are questions Mark will answer in the next 25 minutes. Mark, thank you for being my guest at Job Tales. I really appreciate it. I didn't yet find a human rights expert, and so I'm very happy because it's a very appealing job, and I would like people in the next 25 minutes to understand what is human rights, what is working with human rights, and what do you do presently in your job as executive director at Universal Rights Group?
Well, it's a very good question. What is human rights? I ask myself that every day. But no, thank you very much for inviting me. It's a pleasure to be here and to talk to you and all of the students. So, I mean, human rights, at least the human rights that we deal with are basically internationally protected human rights, meaning international human rights law, and they cover civil and political rights, so things like the right to vote in free and fair elections, the right to freedom of expression, the right to freedom of religion, and what we call economic, social, and cultural rights, and that's things like the right to adequate housing, the right to health, the right to education, etc., etc. I won't go into too much detail. And so the work I do is I'm the head of a think tank focused on international human rights policy.
Okay.
And our job really is to work with states, especially at the United Nations Human Rights Council, but to work with states to strengthen the implementation or the realization of their international human rights obligations. Because, you know, all of the things I just mentioned, all these different rights which states have signed up to and have promised to promote and protect, sound very nice on paper, but of course the reality around the world, as you will know, whether it's Gaza, Ukraine, or countless other countries, is very different to the beautiful words written down in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. So our job is to work with states and the international organizations, especially those based here in Geneva, to slowly over time improve states' human rights records and bring their laws, policies, and practices into line with these beautiful words set down in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights.
Do you specialize on a specific group of rights?
This is an important question, especially in a career sense.
Yeah.
So there are three real kind of career tracks, I would say, when it comes to international human rights or international relations generally, at least here in Geneva. The first is to work for a government, meaning you would be a diplomat, so you would represent your country at the United Nations in Geneva or the United Nations in New York or in countless capitals around the world. So that's the first area of potential work. The second is to work in the international organizations, so work for the United Nations. For example, the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights, or others like UNICEF, which deals with children's rights, or UN Women, which deals with women's rights. And the third big area of work in terms of jobs is civil society. And there are broadly two different kinds of civil society here in Geneva, or human rights civil society anyway. The first are what we call advocacy NGOs. They're the ones that are really focused on addressing very serious human rights situations, so situations of human rights violations and abuses in certain countries, whether that's Syria or Iran or these days in Ukraine or in Gaza. And they push governments to take more robust action against those countries that are committing the human rights violations. So that's the likes of Human Rights Watch and Amnesty, and another big one here in Geneva is the International Service for Human Rights. Then you have organizations like ours, the Universal Rights Group, which is more of a think tank. We focus less on country-specific crises and much more on strengthening the UN institutional architecture for human rights. and much more on thematic issues. One example of that is we've worked a lot over the years on pushing the United Nations to recognize a new human right, universal human rights, and that's the right of everyone everywhere to live in a clean, healthy, and sustainable environment, which was recognized by the Human Rights Council and then by the General Assembly a couple of years ago. So work much more through research and cooperation with states rather than kind of telling states what to do and shouting at them.
Okay, so there seems to be quite a variety of options for someone who wants to get into this line of work. Some could be more, let's say, hands-on and on the field, maybe, and some like the think tank, which is more on a general and then maybe look on, I guess, also lobby level.
No, again, you raise a good point because, you know, if anybody who's interested in getting into human rights work, the tendency, honestly, of people... right from the beginning, is to like the idea of working in Geneva or New York at the United Nations, where all the politics and debates and discussions and the excitement maybe is for a lot of people. And plus, of course, Geneva and New York are nice places to live. But really, over the years, I've found that a good career choice, if you do want to work in international relations, the United Nations, including if you want to work in human rights, is to start by working in the field in developing countries, for example, with UN country teams, with national offices of the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights or UNICEF or any others. One good way in that I know quite a lot of people have done that in terms of working on the ground in developing countries is to start with UN volunteers, UNV, where you go you still get some pay. It's not huge, but you still get paid, even though it's called UN volunteers. But they tend to send you where they need people the most. And then you get to know people and you get to know how the UN works in terms of applying internally for jobs. And so it's a good way. Unfortunately, in Geneva, there's a lot more demand for jobs than there is supply generally in the world of human rights.
There's more demand. Is it difficult? Yeah, because the way that you mentioned, it seems like it's easy, but is it easy or is it difficult to get a human rights related job?
Well, in Geneva, it's not so easy. I mean, we have to be honest. As I said, it's a better approach is to start to get some experience in the field.
In the field,
That's honestly also better for your career and for trying to, if people want to make an actual contribution to human rights, it's really helpful. Why? Because a lot of the people who work here in Geneva who have no field experience, they tend to have a very rigid idea of human rights, you know, either a very pro-Western view of human rights, that it's all about human rights violations and things like freedom of expression and the right to vote. When in fact, you know, people who've been in the field and they understand what life is like in developing countries understand that we can't, you know, as Westerners, I'm a Westerner, go around lecturing to developing countries about human rights, especially forcing upon them, you know, things that we like to talk about, but which might not be a priority if you're living in a very poor country where they don't have food or they don't have housing or clean drinking water. And so it's really helpful for people's personal development, I think, to go in the field. But coming back to your question about Geneva, unfortunately there's more demand because human rights is a very interesting and maybe sexy area of work, as is international relations and the United Nations more broadly. So there's a lot of people who want to work here, and what tends to happen is people can get internships in Geneva, either for diplomatic missions or for the United Nations or for civil society, but often those internships can be unpaid. In the case of the Universal Rights Group, we pay our interns, but many of the diplomatic missions don't, and many of the UN agencies don't. And it's often people get locked into a kind of cycle of doing internships. And so you know, it's a nice idea just to come to Geneva to do an internship, but people should be aware that doesn't necessarily mean you will get a job at the end of it, which is why I really think it's good to get experience in the field.
In the field, which is also not necessarily super easy, right? Because you need to get, you know, to ask the organization, or you could just, you know, travel and to a country and then try your luck, or how would you suggest?
No, I mean, the UN jobs, you have to go, but there's a central UN jobs portal.
Yeah.
And the fact is, there's a lot more jobs in the field than there are in headquarters, whether that's Geneva or New York. Why? Well, it's because all of the UN staffers who are in Geneva and New York, they quite like it here and they've got a life here. The kids are in school here, and so they just don't want to go in the field. So there's much more opportunity. And the other options, so yeah, and it may be just at the beginning, it may just be temporary contracts, but the key is to get your foot in the door. And once you are in a UN country team and you get to know people, then they will tell you where there are job openings and they will probably recommend you for those jobs. So it's much easier. And that's also why UNV, UN Volunteers, is a very interesting way in.
Starting point.
The other option for civil society is, I mean, there are jobs. There's hundreds of human rights NGOs in Geneva, even though there's only three or four or five that are really influential civil society actors. But civil society is probably better at taking on people straight from university. All of our staff, for example, came to us straight from university. So, you know, there's definitely hope for people when it comes to civil society and UN. The third option is you have to try to enter the country's diplomatic service, which is, you know, can be a very rewarding career as well.
How was your path?
I did history at university in the UK, which of course means I had no idea what I wanted to do afterwards, as with all historians. I was going to become a lawyer, actually. I'd got accepted to the School of Law in the UK, but I wasn't convinced, so I went travelling for a year. And while I was travelling, I decided I kind of liked this international world and meeting people from other countries. So instead of going to do law, I went to Belgium, just outside Brussels, a place called Leuven, to do EU studies, basically, a master's. And from there, it was kind of a natural progression to go and work in the EU institutions in Brussels when that was still a valid career choice for an Englishman, because since then we've sort of left the EU. And so I started working in the EU institutions, but mainly in external relations and trade, because that's what I was interested
in.
Then I became a lobbyist in Brussels, but again focused on trade and external relations and working for governments that wanted, for example, free trade agreements with the EU, or wanted to enter the EU in the case of Croatia, or wanted EU support for democratization and human rights, which was the case for the Maldives. By having Maldives as a client, I ended up working full-time for the Maldives because they were going through a democratic transition. So there'd been an autocracy for 30, 40 years, and they were bringing in democracy and human rights protection. So I worked with them to help them draft the human rights chapter of the constitution and set up the National Human Rights Institution and work with on legislation with parliamentarians. And then ended up, the foreign minister asked me to come to Geneva to set up the permanent mission of the Maldives. And we became very active at the Human Rights Council, and I became a diplomat. And then in 2012, and then it's finished, there was a coup d'etat in the Maldives. So the old autocrats family came back. So I had to leave. And I'd always seen that there was a gap in the market in Geneva because there were no think tanks here, unlike in Washington or London or Brussels or New York. And so I set up Geneva's first think tank, and it's on the focus is human rights.
Okay, well, quite a diverse background, I can see.
Unusual background.
Unusual, yeah. So that means that you don't necessarily have to study law in order to do a human rights career?
No, absolutely not. Yeah, and that's a really good point, because a lot of people think you have to do international law. But actually, I find international politics equally, if not more, valid, because a lot of what goes on in the world of human rights, yes, it's based on international human rights law, but 90% of the work here is politics. It's international relations.
Right.
It's how states interact with one another, how you can generate influence. So, yeah, international relations history is just as valid as law.
Interrelations, you know, interpersonal relations are really key for you. And is it something that you find, you know, let's say attractive in your job?
Yeah, I really think if you're going to be a good, whether it's as a diplomat, as a civil society representative, or working in the UN, you're right, interpersonal skills and networking is absolutely essential. I would say probably in this job more than any others. If you think about it, there's 180 countries represented here in Geneva from all around the world. And so you have to be able to get on with people. And you have to have, an open mind. You have to have a degree of empathy. Be willing to put yourself in other people's shoes and understand where they're coming from and what are the challenges in the countries they come from, but also their different cultural and religious backgrounds. And, you know, I think that is really about interpersonal skills that we all have or don't have. And so I think if you're somebody who's very sociable and that you're intrigued by other countries and people from other countries, and you're willing to learn about other countries and their cultural and religious backgrounds, and particularly the challenges they face, rather than, as I mentioned before, just lecturing to people that you need to do this, 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 and this, then you can have a really good and interesting career here.
Nice. And what are the skills you think are important?
Well, I think political skills are extremely important as well. Strategizing, knowing how to build a campaign, knowing how to build coalitions of supportive states and NGOs. You know, a little bit Machiavellian as well, as politics always is, knowing, I would say, the dark arts of international diplomacy, knowing how to get what you want without, you know, upsetting too many people along the way. so, you know, political skills is very important. Communication skills are incredibly important. You know, I think because it was me who set up the Universal Rights Group 10 years or 11 years ago. And I think one of the reasons why I was able to do that during a time when lots and lots of NGOs in Geneva have shut down, just because it's too expensive here, but we've managed to buck the trend and become one of the four or five most influential civil society actors in Geneva.
Nice.
The reason for that, I think, is my private sector experience, which is really interesting career discussion, because I think if I'd gone straight into the public sector, working as a diplomat or working for a UN entity, I wouldn't be the person I am now. I didn't particularly enjoy it, I have to say, being a public relations consultant in Brussels or a public affairs consultant. It was super hard, it was super competitive, very short deadlines all the time, very high pressure to bring in new clients and keep existing clients happy. But I learned more in those 7 or 8 years than I've learned before or since. And part of that learning, one is, you know, the importance of the ability to go and look for new business that I learned. But the other key thing I learned was communication. The importance of communication, communication techniques in terms of mapping your audience, knowing your audience, you know, massaging or creating key messaging that responds to what your audience wants to hear, developing strategies with objectives so you know where you're going and how to get there. I mean, that has all been invaluable, and I think is a big reason why the Universal Rights Group has been relatively successful over the past 10 years.
So bringing a bit of the private sector angle onto your human rights work today.
Yeah. It's another world. I was amazed when I came to Geneva. how slow the pace is here. I mean, all the diplomats I see all the time, they're always complaining still anyway that they have too much work. But the reality is life in the public sector, and maybe this is attractive for some of your listeners, life in the public sector is much more sedate than it is in the private sector.
In the business, yeah.
When you have a bottom line and you have to make profit, then it tends to make you work harder.
Right. But then don't you have also a budget to take care of, like as a group, you need to, you know, you have
yes,
to
we do.
Money and coming
that's
in.
Part of my job that I don't like. I'm constantly having to, I mean, what I'm interested in is the substance, analyzing, researching human rights, working with governments to improve children's rights and women's rights and address issues like hate speech online and racism, all these interesting things. That's what I like. But often, of course, I have to spend a lot of time looking for new donors, trying to agree new projects with countries or with companies like Facebook or with international organizations like UNICEF or UNFPA. They deal with sexual and reproductive health rights, or with UN Women. So, yeah, a lot of my time is taken up with that, and a lot of time is taken up as well in terms of financial reporting and activity reporting to the donors.
Yes, I can imagine that. And what does it take to set up a group, like, or let's say, I don't know if you have experience also, you know, with setting up an NGO, or is it very different? Like, where does someone start? Like, if someone is listening to you and says, "Oh, I want to create my own group."
Well, in principle, it's very easy to set up an NGO because all you have to do is get a group of people together to form a committee or a general assembly, adopt statutes, and then inform the government where you live that the NGO now exists, and then it exists. So the basics are very simple, but then it becomes more complicated, of course, because then you have to find the money and, you know, build up the staff and win new projects. And the reality, honestly, for your listeners, is they shouldn't really try to do that straight out of university or at the beginning of the career. You first need a certain level of experience and expertise, because that's what you're selling in the end to potential donors or clients. It's your experience and your expertise. And plus, going back to what you asked before, you know, to set up a civil society organization like the Universal Rights Group, you need excellent personal contacts.
Right, okay.
Because, you know, you can't just go knocking on the door of the president of Germany or the chancellor of Germany or the prime minister of the UK and say, "Oh, please, can I have some money?" It's all about people you know who are working for those governments, people you know who are working for Facebook. And that's how you end up,
Your reputation and
enough funding to keep going. Yeah, and reputation, as you say, is huge. Yeah,
it's huge. Yeah. So, to conclude, like, what would be the best mix? Because there's always like the chicken and the egg dilemma, where you come, you know, fresh out of school, university, and then you need a job, but you don't have the experience, or you got a PhD, or then even less experience, but then you have a PhD. What is the best mix to start?
Well, I think these days you don't need a PhD, but you do need a master's degree, I think. Mm. I mean, all the CVs we get, if somebody doesn't have a master's degree in a relevant discipline, so international relations or international law, and doesn't know anything about the United Nations, then probably they wouldn't get to the interview stage. So it's important to have a master's. But then, as you say, you then need, and I remember being in this position as well, and I think my approach was, looking back, was right. I just contacted different organizations in Brussels at that time and said, "Look, I'm willing to work for free. I'm willing to be an intern." And that's what I did. I did internships, I think two internships in Brussels. And the second of those, luckily, at some point a job opened up in the organization where I was, which was the American Chamber of Commerce and to the European Union. And so my boss liked me and so said, okay, you can have that job. So, you know, because you're right. I mean, it is depressing because everyone says we need this much experience, but then you can't get that experience. So I think things like internships, even though I would advise people not to do what a lot of people do in Geneva, which is to do 5, 6, 7 unpaid internships. You know, you have to be super rich to be able to do that, of course, but also, you know, you get locked in a cycle then where people are exploiting you a bit. So, but definitely do one or two internships. And the other thing to do is things like, as I said, UN volunteers, just to get some experience in the field. Yeah.
Thank you, Mark, for your precious insight. Our time is up and we need to end it here. That was Mark Lyman, everyone, human rights specialist. You will find more episodes on Spotify, Google Podcasts and Apple Podcasts, as well as any of your favorite players. I'm always looking for new guests, so please send me ideas to jobtalespodcast@gmail.com. Otherwise, see you next week for a new episode of Job Tales.